listening to Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, a podcast where we explore what it's like getting older, the peaks, the valleys, and everything in between. In this season of Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, we're covering topics related to solo aging. I'm your host, Cheryl Proska. Let's grow old together. On today's episode, I'm joined by Darshan Bhatt. Darshan, who is a physical therapist by training, is the founder and president of Namaste Rehab, a company that provides therapy services to older adults at their place of residence. Darshan earned a master's degree from University of Buffalo and a doctor of physical therapy degree from Utica University. After seeing the dire need for rehab services for older adults who could not access care during the COVID pandemic, Darshan decided to start his company. Namaste Rehab's motto is, "Why go to the clinic if the clinic can come to you?" Darshan, welcome and thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm good, Cheryl. How are you?
And thank you. I'm wonderful. So you are joining me today to talk about home health rehab, physical therapy, and why someone would need it, and questions to ask your physical therapist. As a note to our listeners, Darshan will be back on our next episode to talk about bone health. But before we dive in, can you share your background and professional experience with us?
Sure. So as you briefly mentioned, you know, I got the master's from University of Buffalo, which is part of the State University of New York, in exercise physiology, and then my doctorate in physical therapy. But prior to that, I studied my physical therapy degree in India, part of Rajiv Gandhi University, which is, you know, a pretty big university in India, and then came here for master's, which is when I went to University of Buffalo, and then ended up doing some research there, and then started working. And then while I was working, I also went for my doctorate in physical therapy from Utica. Yeah, it used to be Utica College, now it's Utica University.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And let's go ahead and get started. How would you define home health rehab?
That's a very good question because, you know, we come across home health rehab when we're talking about a rehab, when somebody's going home from the hospital or say, oh, I was in a nursing home and now the doctor has recommended that I do home health rehab. So what exactly is home health rehab? Now, it's a little bit more complicated than just a straight answer, but I would like to split it into two. So home health rehab that is received right after somebody comes home from the hospital or the nursing home. You know, we call it part of skilled home health rehab or home care. You'll hear things like that, which is one side of it. And then another outpatient home health rehab, which is, you can compare it to if let's say somebody has a shoulder issue, they're hurting, and they go to their doctor and they go see them and the doctor recommends physical therapy, they're going to go to whatever clinic is near them or whatever the doctor recommends, or if they've had a good experience in the past. So that is what we call outpatient rehab. Now, that outpatient rehab can also be done in your house or in your place of residence. So that is the second part of home health rehab, is the outpatient home health, which not too many people are familiar yet, including a lot of clinicians outside of the therapy realm, which makes it a little bit challenging sometimes to explain it to people. But broadly, you can categorize them into home health rehab that you get when you first come out of the hospital or a nursing home, and then home health rehab that you can access as an outpatient instead of you going over to a clinic.
I have needed to do outpatient physical therapy before, and I had no idea that it was even an option, that I could have possibly done it in my own home. So it's very enlightening to hear that's an option for our individuals listening to the show.
Right. And that's exactly, you know, you hit the hammer right on the nail that, you know, a lot of people don't even know that this is available to them, especially seniors who are under Medicare or otherwise. You know, a lot of them, they would prefer at times sometimes for somebody to come to them rather than them having to, you know, trot over to a clinic. Fortunately, you have to find one that you like and you're comfortable with and then find a therapist, because some of them are huge and they could have 15, 20 therapists, and not knowing who you're going to see. And depending on the day and the time, you know, you could have a different therapist every time. So it's a pretty challenging task to find a clinic that you get comfortable with. So a lot of the seniors, you know, would love to have this where they know exactly who they're seeing, and it's in the comfort of their home. So that eliminates a lot of travel and other hassle.
You briefly started touching on this in the response to your last question, but I thought we could build on it a little bit. Where can you tell us about why someone would need rehabilitative services?
Yeah, so people can need rehabilitative services for a lot of reasons. You know, we mostly see people refer to having rehab or therapy after they've had a surgery. Let's say somebody had a knee replacement or a hip replacement, which are, you know, two of the most common surgeries that you come across in the orthopedic world. And because they've become so common, they're pretty synonymous with outpatient rehab in terms of surgeries that people get at an older age. But surgeries are just one part of why somebody could need rehab. Generalized weakness, you know, believe it or not, a lot of seniors who are fairly active, but not as active as they would like to be or as they could be, do show a decline in their physical functioning over time. Not because they've done anything wrong, but just because, you know, they just haven't been active. Our muscles need regular exercise in order to stay strong and build up. When we sort of, you know, for the proverbial couch potato, like if we even start dragging towards that, even if we are not a complete couch potato, you know, we could be fairly active, you know, but still if we are not getting the amount of exercise that our body needs, that in itself builds up over time. And we could have what we call as generalized weakness, which we see a lot of seniors go through, that they would be active, they'll be driving, they'll be doing everything. But then once in a while, they'll say, oh, you know what, I don't feel too strong today. Or I don't feel I can do the stairs anymore, even though I'm going grocery shopping and I'm going to meet my friends. But that one piece of activity that they have ignored for whatever reason, when they try to do those things, they notice that they're not as strong anymore like they used to be, that they could climb a flight of 15 steps without thinking about it. And now if they have to do the same thing, then they have to really put an effort into it. So weakness is another part. A lot of people, as we grow older, show neurological symptoms, you know, Parkinson's or impaired balance or, you know, tremors, or not having the right kind of gait, which is what leads to a lot of people having falls, unfortunately. You know, your balance could be good, but not good enough to prevent you from a loss of balance. Or let's say you're fine otherwise, but when on an icy surface or on when the weather's not the best outside, you could lose your balance pretty easily. So certain types of neurological issues like that also require rehab services that we see a lot of people go through.
So let's say I feel I'm experiencing some weakness or some trouble with my balance or with my gait. What would the first step be? Would it be talking to a doctor, or should I immediately call physical therapy? How would I get started?
Mm-hmm. I think the first step should always be to call your primary care doctor and see if there is something underlying that may be causing that. Mm. You know, you don't always want to just guess that, oh, it's just benign weakness that would get better with just exercise. Most times that's the case, but you don't want to assume that all the time, because sometimes weakness could be assigned to something else that could be brewing that, you know, if you address it in the correct time frame, that it would just stay there and then we can reverse it. But for seniors, I would always recommend always seeing your primary care doctor when you see that you've been demonstrating weakness or any sort of symptoms that are not typical for you. And they're not symptoms that are going away quickly. You know, let's say you started demonstrating some weakness today and then you're like, oh, maybe it's just today. And then tomorrow you're back to normal, then that's okay. But if you notice that over a period of time, your strength has been going down or your balance has been getting worse, you know, when you walk in the grocery store, maybe you never lost your balance. And then 3 weeks ago, you lost it twice. And this week, you lost it four times. Then that's a trend that is going in the wrong direction. And that warrants a conversation with your primary care doctor and see if there's anything behind it that you need to do. Sometimes, like I said, there could be nothing, and it could just be something that maybe you're not feeling the best. But it never helps to just ignore it. And I would always recommend to see the PCP first.
So in this season of the podcast, we are focusing on solo agers. Can you share with us an example of a solo ager who you've been able to help through in-home rehab?
Absolutely. Without putting any names for privacy, I would say, you know, I had this wonderful female, 78 years old, living by herself. You know, she has always been very active. And unfortunately, her husband passed away, and now she's in an assisted / I would say more like independent living facility, where she has her own apartment, she drives, does everything. And then suddenly she started noticing that there was something wrong with her balance. And she wasn't sure, you know, like we were just discussing, what the first step should be. And one of her kids mentioned that she should please mention it to her doctor and see what they say. So that's exactly what she did. And the doctor recommended physical therapy. And down the line, the script came over to us. And we did an evaluation. We did some standardized testing for balance and strength and found that, yes, her balance was not just off, but it was off by a lot, where she would be considered what we call as a high fall risk. So that was, you know, a wake-up call for her that, oh, something so simple that, or seemingly simple, could be such a danger zone that you're kind of playing around with. So once we got involved, you know, we like I said, we did the initial evaluation. We formulated a plan of care for her that was suited specifically for her, considering her environment, you know, her apartment, the kind of activities she does in her daily routine, the kind of independence she had before she started demonstrating these symptoms, and what her goals are. You know, what we always like to ask the clients, you know, what their goals are, because rather than me trying to tell them that, hey, why don't we get your muscles stronger and why don't we get your transfers better, I always like to hear from them, you know, what is it that they want to achieve? What is it that is bothering them that they would rather work on and be able to do the things that they want to do and like to do in their daily routine? Because let's face it, you know, as people are getting older, they still want to have a good quality of life. You know, what good is it if you're there, but you don't have a good quality in it? So I always start the conversation with the goals once we have the initial evaluation done, and then kind of have them involved in the conversation to see what their priorities are, rather than me setting up three or four different goals for them. I always say, well, let's start with your number one goal or your number one priority or the number one thing that bothers you. And then we take it from there and go down the list of everything that they like to do. And that's exactly what we did with this person. And then 6 weeks later, she felt that her balance was much better. She did not feel as if she was fearful of falling anymore when she was in a crowd, or when she was out grocery shopping, or out visiting her family. And so that kind of made us feel really good that we were able to help this person before something could go wrong. Because a lot of times we get people after they've fallen, or after they've had something unfortunate happen to them, and that's still okay. But I always preach prevention better than cure. If you can prevent a fall from happening in the first place, if you can put in screening methods or protocols to catch things before they happen, then it saves everybody time and effort to then not have to go through a lengthy recovery process, which is, as we all know, not very pain-free. A lot of times once somebody falls or even has an incident like a fall, most people do hurt and it doesn't go away instantaneously. So if we can avoid instances like that, then it helps everybody in keeping the client safe.
It's incredible how big of an improvement it sounds like this woman was able to make in 6 weeks compared to waiting for that crisis situation, which would have probably involved the emergency room, maybe a surgery. And I have to imagine it's much harder to rehab after an emergent surgery compared to trying to catch it before that crisis. So that intervention sounds so important.
Absolutely. And that is the key of what we're trying to preach and here at Namaste Rehab, is if we can catch that fall or that slip or that injury before it happens, then that's our priority. That's what we want to do, so that it would not only save the pain, literal pain that the client may feel, but also the painstaking process that they would have to go through once something has happened. And like you mentioned, it could involve lots of different levels of care. It could go from ER to an inpatient hospital stay, to a surgery, to a nursing home, to, then home. So if we can eliminate all those things and go straight to rehab as a preventative measure, then that would be in everybody's benefit.
So in addition to avoiding the big crisis, what are some of the other benefits of in-home rehab services?
Absolutely. I think that's a great point, because we look at the clinical part always, but we pretty often forget about the social, the psychosocial, the logistics part of in-home therapy or therapy in general. So if we take example of that same person, if she had to go into a clinic that was 5 miles away from where she lived, she would have to either drive herself in that state when she was not feeling safe enough to walk, or she was feeling that she could be a fall risk, or she would have to find somebody else to take her there, which means, you would have to ask a family or a friend to come and help you, when you have an appointment. Now, as we know, physical therapy is not something that you take a pill and you're good the next day. So usually it involves, multiple sessions over a period of weeks or months. So then you would be dependent on somebody to take you there, bring you back, sometimes even wait with you. So that's just one part. Then like we touched on it earlier, trying to find somebody you feel comfortable with, trying to find somebody that is available all the time when you want, and just so you're not switched over from one person to another. Trying to, go to a place that is hygienic, especially we've noticed since COVID that a lot of people don't feel safe going into certain places, certain places of medical buildings or clinics or doctor's offices, what may be, for fear of catching other infections. Just recently we saw, big outbreak of different kinds of viruses at the same time. And that is, even trickier for seniors to be able to avoid those kind of things while trying to get better. So that's another added benefit that you get with your in-home rehab, is you know exactly who's coming to your house, and you can ask them questions, you know, in terms of COVID screening questions or other, you know, health-related questions. And then if you feel comfortable, then, you know, you let them in. But other than that, that's the only variable that you have in you getting therapy at home, versus when you're going out and about, there could be a lot of different variables that you have to dodge through in order to make sure that you're safe accessing the care you need.
Now, for some people, having someone in their home can be uncomfortable. What reassurances can you provide to help people overcome this barrier?
Absolutely. I mean, and I would say, you know, it's unfortunate, but that's the world we live in, where, you know, we have to think twice before letting somebody in who's a stranger, you know, the first time they come to us. So we have a very rigorous process of screening all our employees. They go through the FBI background check, they go through fingerprinting, they go through a criminal background check, they go through child abuse screening. So everything that the state of Pennsylvania requires, you know, we check everything in terms of background and screening to make sure that the people that we're hiring are top notch, you know, they don't have anything against them in terms of any punitive items. We train them rigorously to not only be good at what they're doing clinically, but also be a people person, you know, because the last thing you want is having the best doctor in the world, but not have bedside manners, you know. And we are at some point, you know, unfortunately, most of us have had that experience where, you know, you got a doctor who was referred and was very highly recommended. And then next thing you know, when you're talking to them, they're not looking at you. They're just typing away in their computer or whatnot. And nobody wants that. So we intentionally put in training so that we train all our employees to listen to the client, be more involved, be more compassionate in what they're going through and how to help them, so that it's a better experience for the client.
And you're really doing that from the first interaction with that goal setting, where you're involving the patients, them setting their own goals. I imagine that's going to pay off in the long run, because if I'm setting my own goals, I'm going to work probably harder to achieve that than if somebody is just handing the goals over to me. So that really person-centered approach would just, I feel, be an impeccable way to go about the process.
Absolutely. And that's exactly what we try to do, is we involve the person or the client as much as possible, so that they feel part of their plan of care, which they should rightly be. You know, it's their care. We are just the persons who are providing it to them so that they can meet their goals. So everything is about the client. We are just an accessory to help them reach where they want to go. So it's absolutely, you're right. You know, it's the patient-centered or the person-centered approach is so important when you're dealing with somebody in their home, even more so than if they were at a clinic or at a hospital or, you know, a brick and mortar place.
Would you prefer to age independently in your own home or live in a nursing facility? I know what I'd rather do. Friends Life Care membership offers just that. Plan today for a future lived at home with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience while protecting your savings. Learn about your options at a free seminar or webinar. Register at friendslifecare.org/register or call 215-628-8964. So switching gears a little bit to focus on your specialty, physical therapy, can you start us off with a definition?
Sure. So physical therapy, you know, broadly speaking, is a science where we help people improve their physical functioning by doing certain specific exercises or trainings which help them, you know, improve how they transfer, how they walk, how their muscles behave, you know, getting them stronger, getting somebody's balance better. So physical therapy has so many different branches now, and now you can even get a lot of different specialties as trainings, you know, when you're in school or once you're done with school. But generally speaking, physical therapy on a whole is out there to help people achieve their daily functioning or their normal routine. And if they've declined from that, to bring them back up to that normal routine or their prior level of function, we call them, or go beyond that so that they're doing even better than what they used to do.
What other types of rehabilitative services could benefit older adults?
That's a great good question. A lot of people have heard about physical therapy. I think most of us who have had some kind of medical interaction have heard of PT, but very few people have heard of occupational therapy or speech therapy. Those two tend to be the two cousins of physical therapy that are, you know, not so much in attention all the time. Unfortunately, you know, if you've had the need to go through one of those, then you know what it is. But a lot of people who haven't had to deal with something like that would not know what it is, or they may have heard of it, but not necessarily know what an occupational therapist does or a speech therapist does. So briefly, you know, occupational therapy is more about getting somebody to do their activities of daily living, their self-care, their hygiene, things that you do in order to get yourself ready and going every day, you know, whether it could be your bathing or your personal hygiene, your dressing, the way you interact in your environment, you know, the cooking, the cleaning. Are you having trouble in your daily routine because there's an underlying trouble with your shoulder? Let's say if there's somebody who is cleaning freak and they want their house to look neat and tidy all the time, but now they can't reach overhead, you know, to get those cobwebs that are up there. So is there something that could be done to make it better? Are there adaptive devices or equipment or things that they can use to make that task easier? Another good example is a lot of people that have arthritis in their hands, you know, they can't use our regular silverware because it's too light, or the grip is not good enough, where if they try to use it, you know, either the food falls off or they can't bring it to their mouth before they, you know, start spilling things. So there are adaptive devices with silverware or utensils that you can use that have a bigger grip, so you're holding it sort of like a flashlight rather than a spoon or fork. A lot of people who have neurological disorders, you know, Parkinson's, that have tremors in their hands, they can't hold a certain kind of utensils because with the tremor, you know, they constantly keep shaking and they can't really bring the food up to their mouth. So there are adaptive devices for neurological disorders that you wouldn't know unless, you know, you would talk to a specialist or an occupational therapist who specialize in those sort of things in order to adapt your routines to make it more successful for you. Now, talking about speech therapy, you know, this is a question we get a lot that, oh, my speech is fine. You know, I don't need any speech therapy. And while that is the case, speech therapists, Their official term is speech and language pathologists. And they go to school for a lot more than just training somebody on how to talk. They definitely work on your audition, you know, they work on your phonation, how you say things, how you talk. If you're having trouble because you recently had a stroke and now you can't get the words out right, or you can't articulate them in the right way, or if you have Parkinson's and it just turns the volume down, you know, as we as some of your listeners might know, that with Parkinson's, everything diminishes. It makes your steps smaller. It makes your writing smaller. It makes your sound production weaker. So you feel like you're mumbling rather than talking. Now, the person who has Parkinson's, they don't feel that. They feel that they're talking just fine, but we don't see it that way. We don't hear it that way. We don't interpret it that way. So a lot of times, you know, you have to train them in a certain way so that they can be on the same page as us, or rather we can be on the same page as them. And it can be more legible. The words are coming out right. The tone is correct. The volume is correct. So all those kind of things are done by a speech therapist. And last but not the least, you know, they also work on swallowing. So a lot of people, when they go through any kind of a surgery or a neurological disorder or a stroke, a lot of time their swallowing is affected, as in if you try to drink something, rather than going into your stomach, it goes into your windpipe. And that's when, you know, we feel like we're aspirating, or we're mildly choking, and then we start coughing. So that's a very common thing that people show once they have a neurological issue. And so speech therapists are trained to teach certain strategies that allow you to swallow better. And then they can also recommend the type of texture that is safe for you. Because when you're fine, when nothing's wrong with your swallowing, we don't think about what the texture of the food is, you know, whether the meat is ground up or it's whole, or, you know, whether you're eating fruits that are not cut, or whether you're drinking soda that is super thin and bubbly versus drinking a thick shake. You know, we just assume that everything's fine because we have been fine with that all along. But when you have a swallowing disorder, everything that we just talked about have a different way of going through your neck into your stomach. So speech therapists are trained to assess how well your swallowing is and recommend the right kinds of foods and textures, more importantly, that you would be safe with. So for example, thicker foods or thicker liquids are always easier to swallow than thinner liquids. The chances of somebody aspirating is almost always more on thinner liquids than on thicker liquids. So when they're training somebody on getting their swallowing better, you know, they might try and say, oh, you know, let's try slightly thicker liquid and then see if you can swallow it better, rather than just going straight to water or apple juice or something like that.
And I'm thinking about how important nutrition and hydration are for everyone, and especially for older adults, and what I'm thinking might happen if someone doesn't address it, maybe they start cutting out foods that are very nutritious because it's hard for them to get it from the plate or the bowl into their mouth, as well as then to chew it or swallow it. So they may start excluding food and drink items that are really necessary to have them be able to have the proper amount of nutrition and hydration. And then that can just lead to them feeling more weak, perhaps, because maybe they're not eating or drinking enough or the right types of food to fuel their body.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's a great point, because it's not rocket science to assume that, you know, if you can't eat something, you're probably going to be enticed to kind of stay away from it. Or if some foods are making you cough more, you will say, oh, you know what, that's not really comfortable. I would rather eat something else. Now, that something could be chicken that is giving you the protein you need. Or that could be something else, you know, your daily vitamin syrup that you need to have. But now you can't, because every time you try to drink it, you start coughing. It goes into the wrong pipe, and now you're staying away from it. So that's an excellent point, that most people who have swallowing difficulties, you notice some sort of nutrition decline in them as a result of their difficulty directly. And if it's not addressed in time, you know, you could see things like, you know, their declining nutrition or weight loss that is not planned, weakness because they're not getting enough proteins, or a lot of people, you know, they even have trouble taking their medicines. A lot of the pills that we swallow, if you don't have the right kind of swallow reflex, you know, they could get stuck. And then you would be enticed to, you know, not take it, especially the bigger, for example, a fish oil pill. You know, that tends to be a bigger pill to swallow. And a lot of people who are not having the best swallow reflex, you know, it's extremely difficult for them to take things like that. So it's very important to find the right ways to get nutrition, so that you can supplement all the nutrition needs that you have in order to get strong and stay strong.
So let's say I'm at a point where I know that I do need some type of rehabilitative services, whether it's that I'm coming out of the hospital or I have a prescription from my primary care doctor. I go ahead, I schedule my first appointment with you or someone at your company, and I feel ready to get started. What are some ways that I can improve my chance of success with physical therapy?
Mm-hmm. So it all goes back to that person-centered approach that we talked about earlier. Is being involved in your care is very, very important. You want to be the driver of your care. And you want to take recommendations and suggestions and advice from your clinician, you know, just like you take from your doctor. But you know your body the best. So if something's wrong with your body, you're going to be the first one to find out. A doctor or a therapist may not know until you go through certain tests to determine that, oh, yes, something's wrong, you know, with your balance or with your shoulder movements or your leg strength. But you would feel it right away, because you've known your body longer than anybody else has. And so being the center point of your plan of care is very important. So I always ask all the clients to ask questions. You know, you can never ask too many questions. Always question what you're doing with your therapist, how it helps you, what can you do to improve it on the days that you're not seeing your therapist? You know, a lot of times clients would see their therapist twice a week, and then the other 5 days, you know, they're doing things on their own. Well, a lot of people choose not to do it, or for lack of proper guidance, they don't do it. And so it's very important to ask, you know, what can I do? If I'm seeing you Tuesdays and Thursdays, what can I do on the other days of the week so that I can keep it going? And we're not starting from square one every time we meet again. You know, if you have a goal of going from 1 to 10, and when you're in the clinic, you went from 1 to 3. Now, if you stop doing all the exercises until you come back the next week, chances are that you probably end up at a 2 or a 1.5. So then you're going to start from there, rather than starting at a 3 or maybe even a little bit higher than that, had you followed up with your exercises on your own. So that's another important thing that I always ask people to ask about and then do it, is trying to figure out what you want, what you need to do on the days that you're not seeing your therapist. So if I had to put it briefly, I would always say, just ask questions. Ask questions about everything, what you're doing, why you're doing, how long can you do it? How does it help you? Why this exercise versus something else? You know, the more questions you ask, the more you know about not only the exercise, but also your body and how your body reacts to certain exercises. Just like they react to medicines, our bodies react to exercises differently. You know, some people may react to a certain exercise better than others. So we may have to kind of adapt it and change it to fit that person. But as a therapist, you know, eventually we would know that something's not working out. But if we had that interpretation from the client itself that, hey, you know what, I don't think this is working out. Is there another way to do it? Like, I don't think I can do it this way as well. And always, you know, always try to give your clinician a chance to explain as to why, because there could be certain exercises that are done in a certain way, you know, because that's the safest way to do it. So not necessarily challenging the clinician, but just being curious about the plan of care and how they're approaching the plan of care is the best way to ensure that you're improving your chances of success.
And one thing that I had a little trouble with when I was doing PT, I was going into a brick and mortar building, and then I came home and I thought, okay, well, what's the best place to do these exercises? I have some carpeted areas in my house. I have some areas with throw rugs. I have some hardwood areas. And then there was some equipment that I needed. So if I'd had a professional come into my home and really show me, like, here's the best area, here's some of the equipment, help me order it, all that, I think I would have been better set up on those days that I was doing the exercises in my own home.
Absolutely. And that's we talk about that every time when we do go through the evaluation, that look, and here's the exercises we're going to do, and here's how you'll do it. You know, this is the best place in your house or your apartment to do it, and this is how you do it. You know, you want to avoid certain areas in your apartment because, you know, there's maybe slippery, or there's throw rugs, or there's loose cords. So if you're going out to a brick and mortar place and you're doing all your exercises like you should have, when you come back, that's where you spend most of your time. You may be going to the clinic for 2 hours in a week, but the other time you're at home and you're responsible for doing it. Now, some people have access to a gym or an exercise room in their place of residence, but not everybody does. And not everybody likes to use it for hygiene reasons. So if we could show you the best exercises for you in your apartment or in your house, and the best way to do it, you know, it's like icing on the cake. You can't get anything better than that.
So before we conclude, I would love it if you would share more about Namaste Rehab, your mission, and the services that you provide.
Mm-hmm. So thank you for allowing me to, you know, provide that information. So as you briefly mentioned earlier, Namaste Rehab was born out of the necessity that I saw during the COVID pandemic, that people were wanting to access care, but they just didn't know how to. There was a gap between when somebody was in the hospital or nursing home and had a rigorous therapy, you know, 3 days a week, 5 days a week, 7 days a week, and then came home, may or may not have had home health services, and then were just completely done. And they weren't the regular active seniors who could access care, or maybe they were and they just didn't feel comfortable going out to a clinic in during COVID. And that's where we decided that, you know, why don't we create something that brings the clinic to the client? So that's where our motto is, you know, why go to the clinic if the clinic can come to you? Is that's how it all started. And initially, you know, we were just offering physical therapy services, but then we added occupational therapy and speech therapy services also, so that it's the whole continuum of care that we can provide, you know, in home for clients.
And how can our listeners get in touch with you to learn more information?
Well, please refer to the link that is going to be posted with the podcast. You can also reach out to us at our phone number is 267-991-6040, which is 267-991-6040. And please look at the email if you have any questions, you know, or if you just want to find out more about us, feel free to email us. The email will be posted with the podcast also.
Perfect. And thank you so much for sharing your wealth of knowledge. I learned so much about having home health rehab, about physical therapy, and then also that whole continuum of rehabilitative services. I so appreciate your time.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to Honestly Aging by Friends Life Care Vigor, a unique program focused on aging with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience. You can find links and show notes from this episode on our website at friendslifecare.org/podcast. Thank you to Darshan Bhatt for joining us today. You can learn more about Darshan and Namaste Rehab by visiting namasterehab.com and on LinkedIn. If you like our show, please rate, review, subscribe, and join us next time. To learn more about aging with vitality, independence, growth, and resilience, subscribe to our blog at friendslifecare.org/blog.